And I'm going to say hi to the rest of the people I haven't had a chance to say hi to, like Lindsay and Jennifer and Meg and Millie and Kelly and Karen Tuxbury. Mm-hmm. Whenever I think of Karen Tuxbury, I think of Tennessee Tuxedo.
I know.
Do you remember that cartoon?
I do.
Tennessee Tuxedo must not fail.
Why do I know that you would think about that?
I don't know.
That's just so funny.
I know. We're locked in. So this is Zen Talk number 92. Welcome, everybody. If you are listening after the fact and you're not on live with us, Kathy just led us through a loving kindness meditation. My invitation, if you're listening after the fact, is just take at least one deep breath and get centered so that you can kind of step into this space with some openness and some compassion to yourself and others. And we don't really have any questions lined up yet. I'm sure some people have some questions. But I think we're going to just start
I want to start and kind of explain what we're doing this month. So in light of the events of the country, Todd and I knew that it was important for us personally and then to share this with Team Zen that we needed to continue educating ourselves when it comes to our racial history, when it comes to our own privilege, when it comes to unlearning, dismantling things we haven't even considered about our lives, and also becoming more understanding and becoming a student of other people's experience. Todd and I are definitely, as we said on the podcast, if you listen to it, we are not the teachers of race by any means. We are in our own studentship, but we wanted to at least expand that studentship community to Team Zen. And so this month we are going to, this is a typical Zen talk, but next week, next Wednesday, we are going to talk about White Fragility, the book by Robin DiAngelo. I know for many of you, even prior to the pandemic, you were already too busy to read a book. And now we've had a pandemic and we're in the middle of, you know, some civil rights issues and, you know, there's a lot going on. So if you don't have time to sit down and read this book, I posted on the Team Zen page a bunch of talks that Robin DiAngelo has given. There's been a bunch of articles. I think even Dave posted an article today about, you know, an interview with Robin DiAngelo. Just get some of it so you can bring yourself to the conversation. And if you don't get any of it, you're still welcome to come to the conversation because things will come up within the Zen Talk. And I would just really, it's an opportunity, you know, for us to learn together in community, just like we've been doing. And to with other people, realize that we're all kind of working on the same things.
Do you want to talk about why you chose this book out of the million books that are out there?
Yeah, I think White Fragility is a good start because it's about us. And
when you say us,
it is about people who have, because in this group, even everybody who's on here, the Team Zen is not super diverse. It's vast majority white women. And there is some diversity. And in the people who listen to Zen Parenting, there is some diversity. I don't, you know, I don't want to leave anybody out. But because the majority of people who listen to this show are white women, white fragility really speaks to, it speaks to men and women, but it speaks to what we were raised with and we didn't have to look at, or what we looked away from, or what we were never taught in the first place. I have found it quite enlightening. But I just got off the phone with a client and she's struggling right now. She's a therapist. And she's having her own struggles. And she just keeps talking about how she's had to do certain things. Like there's been text exchanges and between friends, and she's had to say things that people are like, oh, she's had to basically speak up about certain things. And she's like, it's so uncomfortable. It's so uncomfortable. And I'm like, that's white fragility. We're uncomfortable in speaking things, in asking questions, in questioning people's racism, in being, having people tell us we're not doing enough. We say, no, didn't you see my post? And we don't have to look at, white fragility is not another, like, you're a snowflake thing. It's a real thing. It's an education. It's a structure.
It's an experience that we, most white people, have.
Correct. And so it is not something that we're calling people. We're not saying you're, you know, that's why I want you to read the book, because Robin DiAngelo is a, this is her field, that she's an expert in talking about multiculturalism and how this came to be in the history. And the history's fascinating too. And it's just the beginning.
Yeah. And I guess I'll just throw my two cents in before we go to Megan, who has a question. So I had my tribe men's group last night, and we had 26 men assembled in a social distance, safely social distance place. And out of the 8 years we've been doing it, last night was, I think, our fourth time dedicating an entire night to racism and racial justice. And when the Freddie Gray thing happened a few years ago, we didn't really, we knew we wanted to talk about race, but we didn't know how. And one of my friends, who is very connected with a lot of different types of men, contacted one of his buddies saying, would you like to come in and talk to basically a bunch of white guys about Freddie Gray and how we show up in this world? And the guy said, let those white boys do their own work. So that's what we did. We talked together, it was all dominantly white men. And then last night we did something different. I asked a friend of mine who happens to be African-American, and he came in and spoke to us and led a discussion. And it's a both and. Like, for me as a man, as a white straight male, I feel like I need to lead the charge talking to other white men. And I also need to stop and listen to men and women of color and their experiences. So it's just two different perspectives of how we addressed it in our men's group. And neither one was either any more or less valuable. And I also need to just claim, I'm not that well read on the subject. I'm not that experienced in the subject. I grew up mostly around white people. So I know I have this platform, but I don't consider myself an expert on this. I'm going to look at the book and listen to some of the videos that Kathy posted. Kathy's going to read it.
You already read it. Yeah. And I read it before. I just am like now digging in. Like now I'm doing it as something. Anyway, keep going.
So anyways, I just wanted to share kind of like what my experience is as of today on Thursday, June 4th.
And just one thing that I want to add and then we'll move on from this, because we'll have plenty of time to talk about this, coming up too, even though we could talk about it this whole time if you guys want. But for those of you who have, men or women who are African-American, you have friends who are Black and you're asking them questions, or you're, asking to be educated in whatever way. Remember, as has been told to me over again and again in the last couple of days, is also, African-American women, they're not monolithic. Like, they all have different experiences. They all, growing up in different places and having their own experiences. So it's not like one person's story is the Black experience. Like, that's why we have to have a much more open-minded understanding discussion about history and how we got here and how it looks for someone living in this community and this community. It's not a monolithic experience. And I just say that so we don't, because some of us who are like, yes, I have one Black friend and she's my best friend and I grew up with her, which is hugely valuable. You get a lot of great information, but then there's also other people's experiences. We can't just say, this is my experience, so I'm done. There's work to be done for all of us. So
that's just a preview.
That's the preview.
That's a teaser.
But if you have a question about that now, we're happy to, nothing's off limits in this discussion, because we're all kind of, this is what's happening right now.
Yeah.
We don't want to shy away from what's happening.
All right. We're going to move over to Megan. Megan, how are you?
I'm kind of nervous right now. I'm feeling nervous. I appreciate the conversations you all are having. The White Fragility podcast on Goop that you recommended. I loved that. I learned a lot. And just starting with the question at home of what does it mean to be white? Because we do look at race as other, but what is our race and what does it mean to be white? And that was such a good opener. And so we have an 11-year-old son, and we talked about it all. We talked about George Floyd and police brutality and inequity and just the unfairness, and anger arises in him. Mm. So I'm listening, I'm learning, participating, donating money, and I'm glad that we have this forum to have that discussion. So, and then I feel like I need to qualify my issue. which makes me feel, you know, a little bit nervous. And I was like, oh, first world problems. And then I realized that phrase is so awful because my first world problem is now so much different than another person or race in the first world. So it's just been such an emotional time for so many reasons. I feel teary, but you know, life is life. And I do have my own issues inside of my house. And so on another topic other than race.
Yeah, please.
So today is my son's last day of school, and I'm just feeling fear and anxiety regarding summer. And everything's been canceled. I had never had a more perfectly laid out plan for summer. I mean, it was the, you know, a little vacation, a little camp, a little free time, and that's all gone. So I'm grieving that. But there's also a little bit of a background. We've raised him in Arizona. And we made a huge life change 2 years ago, and we moved to Boulder, Colorado. And one of the major reasons was because of summer. And now we can diversify summer and have more opportunities to be outside. And I don't know, I'm just feeling really sad that that's not the case. Now, coupled with my son's personality, he identifies as highly sensitive, because I am as well. And he's very emotionally sensitive. So what that means is, as far as our comfort level and risk, assessing risk, I'm okay with him being outside playing with kids, but there's only one child that he wants to play with, and that's it. And so it'll be like encouraging him to go play in the park with some other kids he doesn't want to, because he doesn't feel emotionally or physically safe. Because now bring in COVID, and wow, that quarantine had a huge effect on his feelings of safety. And so I guess my fear and my anxiety is I am envisioning a summer that is nothing fun, nothing to look forward to. He's relying on one child for his entertainment, and you know, from my perspective, then I get all the overflow of energy, of entertainment. And then he has such resistance to certain ideas, or, you know, that's not safe, Mom. We can't go to the Denver Botanical Gardens. I'm not ready for that. Mm-hmm. And then not wanting to be around even classmates. And he doesn't have a huge array of friends from class because it's a smaller school. But so I know I'm just kind of rambling, because I'm trying to get to like, what is the essence of it? And maybe it is, how do I meet a child who is emotionally sensitive during this time? Mm-hmm. I can't push him into anything. You can't force him into anything. I recognize that. It's not worth it. I can make suggestions, which are then maybe, you know, probably shot down. So, and by the way, I'm a part-time college instructor. So I'm teaching online. I have time, you know, I have time. So do I just schedule my day? Do I go about my day and invite him to join me? And if not, he's home. Luckily, my husband works from home, so I can leave. I'm just trying to work this all out in my head. And I know I'm dealing with anxiety, disappointment, fear. And by the way, I shared with him my fear. Mm-hmm. Like, this is my fear that this summer, you know, I don't know what will happen. And he thinks he's going to get a go-kart. I pretty much let him know today, you're not getting a go-kart. Mm-hmm. He's like, Mom, it's okay. I got it all planned in my head. Like, it's not a go-kart though. Mm. So I don't know.
Megan, how old is he?
11.
He's 11.
And he has no siblings, right?
No. So, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Sweetie.
Well, a few things, and I can just, you know, because you're already, as you guys always do on this, you're kind of answering your own question. Part of the reason that you are feeling all the fear and anxiety is because you're trying to work something out in your head that hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to plan something. Hi, Cameron. You're trying to decide how the summer's going to go, because we all had a false sense of security that if we organized camp and we had play dates and we had scheduled, then everything would go fine. And we could take it off our minds and our children would have no problems and we'd be free and we'd all be drinking glasses of wine at night, pleased with ourselves. And we all do that, not just you, Megan. I do it too. It's like, that's how we look at our schedule. We look at the week and we say, schedule. Ah, I'm good. And what we're, and now what we're trying to do is figure out in our heads how 3 months is going to look. And the bottom line is, you can't. So it's kind of like, sorry to take it to such a far degree here, but it, maybe it'll help you see it this way. It's like us trying to figure out what happens when we die. Mm. We don't know. And we keep trying to figure it out and plan it out and do it and do it and do it. And that is not accessible. Tomorrow is not accessible to you because it's not here. So that's the big, and I'm, this is just one piece. That's the big framework, is that the reason you feel fear and discomfort is because you can't control it, but you never were controlling it, even when there were plans. So what I'm trying to do is like reframe it for you, where not having plans doesn't mean you have associated with no plans means you're going to be overwhelmed. He's going to be sad. He'll have no friends. You're going to have to figure it out. And those things are not correlated. You've made that up in your head because we've lived so long with plans that we've gotten comfortable with plans equal control. And that was never true either. So everything's being blown to bits here. I also feel like, and again, the go-kart thing, I don't want to focus just in on that because there's other things, but what this summer is an opportunity for our kids to do is to not do things we planned for them and to find themselves in nothingness a little bit.
Starting with boredom.
There will be times that you'll feel he's on his technology too much. He might bug you while you're working. I'm not saying those things won't happen. That probably happened before too. Mm. What I'm saying is that when we let go of thinking we need to control every moment, then our kids kind of have a freedom to look at the world a different way. We're not trusting of it because we've never seen it. And society tells us that planning is the way to do everything. Mm-hmm. But this is one summer out of his life.
Yeah.
One where he's going to have freedom. Have him build a go-kart. You know, when he's like, I want it, you don't have to buy it for him, but what are the pieces? Why do you want it? Research it. And it's not about the go-kart. It's he's telling you, Mom, I've got these awesome creative ideas, but your first instinct was no, we're not that. And it's like, instead it's like, okay, let's talk about that. I'm not quite sure I'm comfortable with you driving a go-kart around town. Like I hear that, but it's also like, he's saying I've got space. And we are still trying to like control that. And it's interesting how things come and go. Like, you know, one of my daughters was a month ago so into piano, playing all the time. And now she's kind of done with it. And that's fine. That's what this is. It's like, what can he do? And I also want to speak to your fear about him being with one friend. Mm-hmm. A one friend summer could be pretty awesome. You're decreasing all of that, like your fear is, but then he won't be socializing, but he is socializing. And he's like, again, it's busting apart that idea that he needs lots of people to be a happy person. There's nothing true about that.
Well, and I probably, tell me if I'm wrong, Megan, I'm guessing like you talked about the overflow, like whenever he gets bored, he's gonna come looking for me. Yeah. And that is, first of all, a good possibility.
Yeah, it's probably true.
And when that happens, how are you, like, this is an inside job, as every problem that any of us have is, the question is, how are you going to be and feel, not if, but when that happens? Because if you start getting like, oh, I know, doesn't this suck? Or like you feel responsible for him. Cause I totally get it. Like my kids are bored. I feel like I need to entertain them. I'm raising my hand with you, but we got to like look inward when we have these feelings, you know, assuming that you do feel this responsibility to make sure that he's having a good summer. Yeah, you can have some influence over it. But as, like Kathy said, this is one out of whatever, nine, let's say he lives 100 years. This is one out of 100 where he might be bored and he might look back on and say, God, that was a boring summer. Or he might be like, God, remember that summer?
When I built a go-kart?
I never would have thought about this or that. So like, you know, I'm thinking about Byron Katie right now. Like, how could the opposite of my story be true? Yeah. You know, because mm-hmm. your fears are he's going to be bored. He's going to just really, you know.
He won't see anybody.
It's all going to be about this one friend of his. And if the friend goes on vacation, then I'm totally screwed. Like, how can all these things be an opportunity instead of a problem?
And most likely, Megan, it'll be that it's not about now everything's going to be great. There won't be issues. There will be issues, but there were issues before too. Mm. That's what we forget, is we think that when I had all the plans, we romanticize things. When my kids were in school, everything was great. It was not. We've been doing Teen Zen for 2 or 3 years. We've been hearing why every day has been challenging, depending. So what you're experiencing is now it's something new. It's uncertain. You don't know what it's going to look like. But I think what Todd and I are both saying, it's not necessarily going to be bad. It's just going to be different. And it'll be that discomfort. We're going through this right now in our country with, we're having to look at things new and it's uncomfortable, but it's not bad. And so, and for you, as Todd and I have agreed, it's a mindfulness experience of really, like, all you have to do, is today.
And I kind of like the fact that you shared with this 11-year-old boy, like, you know, mom's kind of scared right now.
Or honest.
Yeah, like, I think that without, like, emotionally vomiting on him, and it doesn't sound like that's what you did, I love that honesty, because we always feel like as parents, we got to, like, say the exact right thing or bring that, you know, just be honest. So before we go to Dawn, I want to hear if anything connected with you, anything didn't connect with you. What do you think?
Well, control is always one of my things to work on. So, yeah, I mean, that's what a schedule is. I like hearing that it doesn't mean it's bad. I think when I kind of started spiraling is when I realized we'd been distance learning for like 11 weeks and summer's 12 weeks. And I went, whoa, no, that was like a wake up call. But, and so it can be okay.
Yes.
It can be okay. And by the way, he does have a go-kart. It just doesn't meet his specifications right now. He wants the next level.
Yeah.
And the next level to build is, it's, we've done the research.
Yeah.
But we'll have to find, but that's him. He just gets so into something, and I've always tried to just get out of the way so he can, he can pursue it, but it's come to a dead end.
Yes. Really. You're like, I've taken it as far as I can go, sweetheart.
That's- and when he says something like, oh, I really want that go-kart, and he starts complaining and whining, like, hey, I totally get it. Like, is it, you know, I'm a 48-year-old man. Like, the bigger, faster go-kart is a lot more fun than the one that I have. Like, just empathize with him. Like, I totally get it. Like, I would want that too if I were you. But unfortunately, buddy, we're not gonna, because of blah, 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 blah. So.
And then he can take the, and say, but because you have a go-kart, because you have this creative energy, what is the next thing? What is your next thing? And he, especially sensitive kids are more introvert. I don't know that he's necessarily introverted, but they have so much creativity in them. And that brings them as much joy as being with people. I get as much joy reading a book and designing a vision board as I do being with people. Sorry. But I, you know, like, I really do find contentment in being alone. And that isn't me being antisocial, because I can also do the people thing. So it's like, he's going to monitor, you know, because the rest of his summers, it's going to be people, 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 people. So, well, he's got a summer for
and
him.
I know that there's moms and dads in the micro community of differently wired. And I don't know if Megan, if you attach yourself or you align yourself, but there's moms who have kids who are highly sensitive in that community. So, you know, maybe just kind of, because I think they just had a call
the other day.
Dawn will be able to tell us whether or not they did or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So were you aware that there is this micro community? I'm not the best at communicating to Team Zen. So did you know that we have these micro communities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew. Are you asking me?
Yes.
Oh yeah, I was aware of differently wired.
Yeah. So, and I just want to normalize. I'm worried about the same thing you are.
Yeah.
We're just starting the summer. I'm raising my hand. I'm right there with you. So.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, Megan. Is I know I sound really like teachy, like do this and say this, but it's only because I'm having to do it myself. Like, it's not because I've been through this before, because none of us have. But it's been kind of interesting. Like, I kind of set some expectations for the girls the other day, my hopes for their summer. And then I'm just going to kind of, you know, we still have expectations and boundaries and stuff, but then it kind of, I'm going to let go and see what happens.
So Courtney just said something, and then we're going to go to Dawn. Would the summer maybe be the perfect environment for him to be more confident in himself as a less social child, because he's able to focus on one friend? There may be opportunity there versus him feeling any sort of shame around not having as many friends or other kids. Yeah, that's like, you know, how can we see this as an opportunity instead of a problem? So,
I like that.
Megan, thanks for asking your question.
Yeah, it's good.
Before we go over to good old Dawn, I'm not supposed to say good old.
Yeah, what's good old?
I don't know. I just say good old. And I've been playing with the speaker mode. I feel more connected when I'm looking at the person asking the question on a large screen. So for those of you guys who forget what Zoom can do, you can press speaker mode and whoever's speaking will come up bigger versus the grid of the smaller people. So I unmuted Dawn. And Dawn, before you ask your question, do you want to speak about the micro community at all or no?
No, just that we just had our own call last week, and I need to set up the next one. But we do all of that organizing within our Facebook page.
Okay, sweet. All right, what's your question?
It is on the race topic. To your point, Todd, about everything is an inside job. I would like some help knowing how to deal with the flood of feelings that happen to me when I'm in a social situation where one of the guys makes a racist comment. And, you know, I've made very passive aggressive comments in the past, but last Friday night was the first time that I, you know, made something very clear. And we were invited by our friends to the pool this weekend. And aside from not really wanting to go, because I just feel like it feels very, I don't know, Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake. Like, here we are playing in the pool while America's burning. It just doesn't feel right to me. And then I know that somebody is going to say something. Yep. And what happens to me when I used to be quiet was just, I would tense up. Angry, like just be so angry about the comment, so frustrated that in order for me to speak up, I'm now going to destroy the vibe, that the nice summer vibe that we were all having. I've got to make everything awkward. And the only reason it's awkward is because they disagree with it and because they said it in the first place, so mad that I'm being put in that position. So all these, like, you know, feelings. And there's a little bit of background to how I'm feeling, in that I grew up very, very, very religious. My parents, their church was the kind of church that believed they were the only Christians going to heaven. No other denomination, no other, I mean, extremely, like, if you weren't in our church, and it was an international church, but if you weren't a part of our church, you weren't going to heaven. Mm-hmm. So, and we were expected to, I may have shared this story with you guys before. We were expected to, like, it was called blitzing. We were expected to go out into, like, outdoor malls and just stop people and be like, hey, I want to invite you to my church. So I was having to go to strangers, and I hated it. I always hated it. But I was also expected to speak up just like this in situations where somebody was saying something inappropriate. Mm. And so social situations for me, social situations for me were always, I was always scared of them because I knew somebody was going to say something that I would have to say something about. I just hated it. I just wanted to be like, gosh, can't I just go somewhere and relax? So that was obviously not to do with race. That was to do with a religion thing. And, but that was also forced on me. Like, that was somebody else's expectation of me. This is the first time I've had an internal motivation. Like, these are things, there's other comments that are made, about other races or, you know, sexist comments. And I have the same reaction to every single one of them. Mm-hmm. And I know it's not right to stand up and just be like, you know, angry and, you know, but the problem is the feelings that I have inside are angry and they are very strong. And I don't know what to do about that. And I don't know, I know that I need to say something, but my voice is going to come out shaky. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like things like that. Like I just, and I'm already like stressing out about something that's happening.
Yeah.
Days from now and every social event from, because I've made a commitment, I will never be silent again.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with all the like, anyway. And I also recognize the privilege that that is for that to be my problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so there's guilt mixed in there too. But anyway, hope that is
a great question.
Yeah.
I get it.
I'm sure Kathy has a lot of thoughts, so I'll go first because I think mine will be shorter. First of all, I'm struggling with you, and I'm a white straight man who supposedly has all the power and the privilege in the whole world. And my biggest worry is my friends might think differently of me and how messed up that is. So I'm trying to picture you at a pool barbecue and you're, you know, the woman with a group of other people. And apparently there's some, at least one perspective that you disagree with. It's this really scary thing. Like I get scared with my guy friends to speak up. I can only imagine what it's like in at the pool barbecue to speak up. So I just want to like kind of agree with you. And I don't think there is a right answer on how to do this. I think there's a whole spectrum of it. Like maybe 2 years ago, I would have laughed with the stupid joke and now I don't laugh anymore. And maybe now today I'll say something like, well, help me understand why you think that or why would you make a comment like that? And really from a place of inquiring or curiosity instead of that's bullshit. Like I disagree. You're a racist. Like, I don't know how we're going to get anywhere with that. So, And there's, you know, so there's times when I'm like, I got to be bigger and I got to stand up stronger. And sometimes I simply don't have the courage to do it. So maybe is there a 10% better way of doing it versus 100% better way of doing it? And know that the next time you speak up at the pool, it may not come out right. And you're going to get another opportunity to do it again. So just do the best you can and bless yourself for having the commitment. I haven't even made that commitment to myself that I'm going to speak up every time I hear a racist comment. So in that regard, you're my teacher. Like, thank you for owning that. So those are a few of the things that I have.
Yeah, I think, you know, I remember, because these come in waves, like you said, you know, sometimes it's sexism, racism, whatever it may be that we're talking about. And I remember when I first started speaking up in my mid-30s, I was like a kind of like a fire hose. I came on way too strong. And some of my friends were like, whoa. And then I was kind of embarrassed because I wasn't very articulate about what I was saying. I didn't have a lot of education. What I had was a lot of feeling. Mm-hmm. And in some ways right now you're having a lot of feeling and I'm not saying you're not educated about it. It might be a mixture of both, but there's a lot of feeling. So you have to, there's two things you got to monitor. One of them is that you need someone like in this group or, you know, a friend that you have or your partner to be able to talk about these issues so that anger isn't festering inside because you need to say it out loud. So it's not sitting inside. You know, like the other night I had this big rant with Todd about how there are things that are right and there are things that are wrong and people know when they're wrong. And he was kind of like, okay, it was not for public consumption, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But I needed to like do that whole, you know, people are bad or people are good binary thing that doesn't even exist, but it was anger, right? But what you are, Dawn, is you are committed to speaking up, but the commitment is in a self-regulated bridge building way. Mm. And I don't mean that you have to be, it's not about being worried about other people, but it's about saying something that you believe that is said in a way that even if it just sits out there and everyone goes, oh, what blanket, you're like, but that's what I believe and that's who I am. Because you're not a yeller. You're not going to, you know, coming out there and saying, like Todd said, you're all racist or that's horrible or who do you think you are? That's not really who you are. That's the anger. So what you're trying to do is find a way to speak up that you feel in your integrity. You're not doing it to demonstrate to everyone that you're a good person. Mm. You're not doing it to be, I'm right and you're wrong. You're just it, and it's a very, I'm still finding this place. Like I'm not, when I'm offering this to you, I'm not saying, and I have found that foundation for myself. I'm still a little dysregulated in these conversations where my emotions get the best of me. But I guess the point is I'll share what I've found. For me, humor, not humor about the subject, but something like
levity.
Not that. I'm not going there. That's what I use with Brian all the time.
I
have a friend who says racist things, right? And I'll be like, nope. And I just put my hand, I don't need to be like, and here's all my books I've read. It's not in this space. And that's it. That's it. And they may say, I just got off with a client who was saying I did that. And some of the men in the group were like, God, you used to be fun. And she was like, you know what? I'm still fun, but I also know what I believe. She's like, that part of me exists, but this is who I am too. And this is the last thing I'll say about it. What I have come to the what has woke me up this week is that I want people to know who I am. That there's a lot of people I've been tiptoeing around, good friends whose partners supported Trump. Exactly. People in my life who I've been like, oh yeah, you know, I see your side. I still love you, but this is who I am. And we can still have a conversation, but that you're going to know what goes in this conversation. Not because I'm in control of it, but because I do things like, nope, that's not okay. So I'll stop. And what do you think?
You're good. We can hear you.
I can't hear.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So many things. I'm going to listen back to this recording because there was that many things that.
Okay, good.
Could have commented on, but probably the one that's standing out to me the most is the bridge building.
Yeah.
Because I know that me standing up and just exercising my, you know, emotions won't help them. It will alienate them.
Correct.
It will shame them, and nobody learns from shame. So that's kind of where I was coming from, where I don't know what to do with all this that I'm feeling in here, but to your point, I have joined. In fact, one of the Team Zen members started a group.
Hannah. Yep.
And I joined that, and I sent her. I don't even know her. I've no interactions with her, you know, outside of just these couple messages. And I said, I really actually feel like this group is people who. It's not people that are trying to get on board. It's people who've kind of been in the closet about being on board, and they're ready to go. And they're like, hold me accountable. You know, I want to hear every week, what did you guys do this week? You know, to like actually take action. So that's sort of where I am. And when you said, this is who I am, that sort of like out of the closet thing, like, this is who I am. This is who I've always been. I've never felt free to say that because of the repercussions. I don't care about the repercussions anymore, but I also can get very data dumpy. I can get very preachy. And I do, when I do get to a place, I do get angry that other people aren't at that place. I do have a really hard time. In my head, I know, I understand that not everyone is going to be at the same place and come to the same conclusions as you at the same time, but I get angry about that. I get angry because I'm dragging them behind me, and I don't know. I just, wouldn't it be great if all of our friends, you know,
woke up,
we're involved and whatever, and we're all still, but I think it's more that I don't feel safe. I don't feel appreciated. I don't feel valued. And thank God for places like this, where I just want to be around people that are open. They're opening. They're open to hearing you're wrong. You know? And I don't know. So I hear you, and I totally agree. I would love to be able to get to a place where I can be sitting at the pool. And I think I can do that. I actually think I could do the hands thing. So thank you. I don't think I'm in a place where I could like provide anything that is bridge building because of how much is in here.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what I was stressing about, is that I can't give that right now, but I can do that.
Yeah. And that is a right now in this moment, your regulated self is, I don't have all the words yet. I'm not firmly planted yet, but blah, 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 blah. That is, I'm not taking that in. And you know, I posted this right before we started the Zen talk, and I don't know if you guys can see it, but I think it's really important to move it over a little bit so they can see that it's set like the guy who's like exhausted. It's like understanding racism in our country, and it's like an exhausted white person.
Yes.
And there's a African-American man with a backpack saying, now we have work to do. We're exhausted right now. And I'm making fun of us, but I'm not, because a lot of us are waking up so much that we're like, woo, systemic racism. Holy shit. Like, wow. And people, you know, that's what I mean. Like men and women of color are like, oh no, this is the steep hill. And so we have to realize if we're going to do the steep hill with everybody, we got to take care of ourselves, practice this, not expect perfection, know it's going to get messy, know you're going to get called out on both sides. Friends who are saying you're not fun anymore, and friends who are saying, oh, you're thinking you're so enlightened, but you just use this word or you said this, and it's going, yep. Like I struggle with that because my intention is always to be so thoughtful, and someone will say, yeah, but you said this. And I'm like, but that's my fragility. And at least now I have terminology for that rather than me blaming that person and saying, you made me feel bad. What I'm realizing is, as a white woman, I haven't been questioned about race at all because I've been the majority race. So I've been walking around white going, you know, this isn't a problem and this isn't a problem. And there's been lots of problems. So now it's just, there's that opening. So the reason I posted this is like, it's tiring when you're like, holy crap.
And think about people of color from their perspective, like, we've lived this since we were born.
Right.
You guys are dealing with this for a week or a month or a year. Like,
well, and it's why I like the picture again, because the man with the backpack is like, let's go.
Yeah. Here we go.
Here we go.
The only other thing I wanted to share with you, and I guess it's not specific to race, it's more specific to emotions, Dawn. And this goes for all of us. You know, you are, somebody says something, you get angry, and maybe you don't feel safe enough to say something there. My only invitation is, at some point, you need to let go of that anger. And it could be talking to your husband about it. It could
texting them after the party.
Texting them after the party. You need to let that go, because if you just withhold and let that stuff fester, you're going to be tired. You're going to question yourself. You need to kind of like physically get that out. And, you know, because the coaching program I'm learning from right now is emotional intelligence. So first you need to know what emotion you're feeling. Can you locate it inside your body? Can you express it through sound or movement? And then lastly, can you find wisdom? And the wisdom that comes from anger is something needs to be stopped. The wisdom that comes from fear is something needs to, I think, be let go of. The wisdom from sadness means something needs to be grieved. The wisdom of joy means something needs to be celebrated. So like, all of these emotions that we have, the primary ones, have an expression, and then it also has an intelligence. Like our body tells us before our brain even does, if we can kind of tune in. And that goes for anything, whether you're parenting your kid because they're watching too much screen time, or you're at a barbecue at a pool and somebody's saying a racist comment. You need to treat yourself to the point where you have this integrity. Integrity, it's a derivation of the word integer, which means whole. You need to like be whole. And the only way to do that is to kind of let these emotions be expressed. Otherwise, that's when things kind of turn inward and then all of a sudden turns into some type of disease or tiredness or
disease.
Anything.
Well, and on that note, there's a podcast you guys, I don't know if you listened to it, but it was the Duplass brothers and talking to Brené Brown. And it was in her Unlocking Us podcast. And I listened to it like four times. I loved it. But one of the things they were talking about, and they were talking about their own difficult conversations, but it relates to this, Dawn, is that they said, man, the truth is so hard, but it's so much easier. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about that quote was that in the moment, it's uncomfortable. You feel like, oh my God, and maybe the hose was on too strong. It's so hard, but later, it's so much easier. You go home knowing who you are. You look in the mirror and know who you are. You go out in the world, people know who you are. So the moment's hard, but the rest is easy versus the other way of I'm going to shut down and not say anything, then everything's hard because then you're angry at yourself. Then you're angry you didn't say something. Then people don't know you. So the truth is hard, but it's so much easier.
The long run. In the long run, it's better. In the short run, it sucks.
Correct.
Yeah, sometimes the truth
sucks. Here's to the short run.
And Millie says, I so appreciate everything you guys are saying. I felt the same as Dawn, minus the pool party and overt racist comments flowing. But feel desperate to do something. I like how Todd said we can try to move 10% versus 100% or 90%. It doesn't let me off the hook, but gives me a goal that's more achievable. And I started using the 10% just because I have all these people in my life that say I got to be more emotionally expressive and be more messy and quit being Mr. Nice Guy and all that other stuff. And, you know, when I'm trying to be 100% different, it feels inauthentic to me. But if I could just be 10% different, I feel like that's more within my capacity. So
today.
So that like works for me with a lot of stuff. And maybe it's like, how are you going to express yourself at a pool party? Maybe you just like, you know, do like, I like Kathy's idea. Just like, oh, no, sorry, we're not going there right now.
No. And you know, Millie, your point and Dawn's point, like I get a visual when I was reading your comment, Millie, of a hose again, because like, I'm thinking about watering my flowers and even giving them a little water mm-hmm. is going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. If I pull the hose on full blast, it's not good.
Yeah.
And coming at something 100% doesn't leave room for the other people. Yeah. I shouldn't be taking up 100% of the space, but I'm going to take up some of it. And maybe originally it's 5% or 10% and eventually it'd be 50 or however many people are in the room, you know, but we shouldn't be coming on 100%.
There's some people out there that have the makeup where they do that, but it's not me.
That's what I was going to say is I'm saying we shouldn't. That's not true because there are eights, Enneagram eights, who love coming on 100% and they are good at it. And your friend Eric is an eight and he comes on 100%. And so I shouldn't say we shouldn't, but if that is not your way, then find at least have some water come out of the hose.
Cause that's the integrity part. Like I'm not an eight on the Enneagram. I can't do 100% different. But I can do 10%, and that feels mm-hmm. right to me. If I did 100, it would be BS. I'd be acting.
Well, and you would be acting out of your emotion. You would not be regulated, and you would probably not be hurt. Like the last time I did that with one of my girlfriends, she was like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa!"
Well, and
stop talking to me.
And what's funny is, breathe. Like Dawn, next time this happens to you,
take a breath,
because I usually like I just want to jump and attack. And if we could just take one conscious breath before we attack, I think the attack is going to look a little bit different.
And you know what? I was just thinking sometimes, Dawn, when I have done that, taken a breath, someone notices that I did that and they'll go, "What?" And the door opens. Like I'll go, and they'll go, "What? Why are you taking a breath?" And I'm like, "Ooh, there's the door. Okay, this is why I took a breath. Because you just said blah, blah, blah." And a lot of times my friends who know, I get, you know, have always been kind of made fun of because I'm a social worker. Like, "Oh, well, Kathy thinks this," or whatever. And they say something and then look at me. Mm-hmm. They want to see how I'll respond. So sometimes if I just take a breath and I chill, then they're like, what did I say? And I'm like, okay. There's my door. Well, they asked.
There's the examples of like spiritual teachers like Thich Nhat Hanh. I think either you or Jess went to go see him. And like when he first started talking, he just breathed. Like he didn't say anything.
He walked out and breathed for 5 minutes and everyone just sat there. And like how many people were there? 500 just got silent.
Right? It's contagious. So if you're like angry and like fighting, it's going to breed more anger and fighting. If you can... Chill your body a little bit. It does have an energetic reaction to the other people around you. Mm-hmm. And I can't explain why, but I believe it.
And the deep breath is you not participating too. Because other people might be like, "Yeah, why did they?" Or "What?" And you're like, "I'm not going to participate in that conversation."
Yeah, I'm going
Dawn,
back.
She wants a question.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Dawn.
I love that. I really love that. But the thought just popped into my head. But wait, we're being called to not be silent anymore. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I don't feel like that's okay anymore. So,
Well, it's a mixture of both because you can like, say you take the deep breath and nobody notices you Because the deep breath is not the end, it's the beginning.
Odds are nobody's going to notice.
If nobody gives you the door, you may say, okay, I've been deep breathing over here. Enough, enough. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't, again, these are all practices. Everybody here, the reason we do this with our kids, we do this with our spouse, we're going to do this now in public when it comes to race, we're going to do this with sexism. You figure out what's effective and what works. And then you're going to find, ooh, that didn't work with that person. I'm going to have to figure out another way. There is no one way. You're going to go into this pool party and you're going to try some things. And by trying some things, you're not being silent. You are doing something new, doing something different. And you may leave and go, I didn't do enough. Then turn it up 5% next time. Instead of getting into a corner of shame about I didn't do enough, you're going to say next time. That's like one of my nightly prayers is like tomorrow, a little more.
We're going to go over to Jennifer in a second. I did want to just say, I'm thinking of Michael Singer right now, because a lot of people, like whether it's Buddha or Michael Singer or Yoda, and they're like, just be present and non-judgmental and surrender. And surrender does not mean inaction. Mm-mm. Surrender means letting go of your judgments and then act.
And then taking action.
From that place. But what most of us are hardwired to do is to act from threat. So we don't get centered. We don't surrender to what is. We just react. If we can surrender to the moment, right now this man is making a racist comment. This is happening for me right now. This is a learning opportunity for me. This is an opportunity for me to get present and to speak my truth on behalf of all of those that I feel like I need to support. From that place, that's where you want to speak from.
And you respond, not react.
And you respond as opposed to reaction is you skip over one big step. Response is one breath, then talk. Anyways, Jennifer. Yep. Hi.
Guys.
Hi, Jen.
First, thank you so much for opening up this dialogue, because I think it's going to be really, really helpful. For me, I listened to the podcast, the Goop podcast that Kathy recommended with the white fragility author. And I actually, when I was done listening to it, felt really bad. Like I felt like guilty for being white. I was feeling, I guess I've always felt that, I do have my beliefs and I'm strong in them and I feel like I stand up for them, but I also don't have that many opportunities where I live to, like, I'm not really in any situations like Dawn is. Like, I live in a pretty homogeneous neighborhood, but our greater community is very diverse. And I feel like I lead by example with my kids. And but I guess I left the podcast, like, she said a couple of things that really hit me. Like, one of the things she said was, you know, it's not enough to be nice and kind. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I think being nice and kind is so important, but it's not enough. So, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Like, I'm not doing enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not standing up enough. And then the other thing she said, and I know this was recorded before, COVID happened and everything, but she said, you know, I know I'm going to offend your audience, but, you know, this whole discussion about self-care is very emblematic of white privilege. And I was like, oh my gosh, now self-care is bad. I shouldn't even be taking care of myself because there's so many other people out there who can't do that. Or I went into like a shame spiral about being white. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this is becoming. And I just didn't, I was left in a place where I felt really helpless. I don't even know what to do. So this is more of a contest. It isn't good. Like Dawn said, shame doesn't teach us anything. But I was just, I don't know if other people are feeling that way, but I just started feeling really bad about myself and feeling like I wasn't doing enough and feeling a lot of, you know, embarrassment for just being white. Like, I don't even want to be white right now because it's, I felt so embarrassed by my skin color and my privilege. So that's basically my comment.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. I think a lot of people are feeling that, especially watching what's going on or in the initial reading. And when I say this, please don't think that I'm like calling you something, but that's fragility. Is the I feel guilty, I feel ashamed. That's exactly, that is what fragility is. And women of color will often refer to white women tears, which is, oh, I feel so bad, what can I do? And we all, this is, I'm pointing myself to everybody here, not just Jen, but they're like, enough of the white women tears. Mm. Like, let's just get educated and learn and ask some questions. And because like you said, Jen, the shame doesn't do anything. It's a waste of time. And I follow a lot of Black women who are therapists and who are mental health workers, and they believe in self-care. They absolutely believe in self-care, but it looks different for people. Mm-hmm. Like right now, one of the Black women who I'm following, she does a Facebook post every day. She walks and talks, you know, and tells us what's going on. And she is saying to everybody, rest today, rest, take a day off. Today is for you. You've been grieving. And I am definitely the minority in her community. So when Robin DiAngelo is saying self-care is something to be, you know, it is privilege, but it doesn't mean it's not important. She just means when women are constantly living at the top of Maslow's hierarchy, which is it's all about evolving, mm-hmm. that's privilege. Mm-hmm. But even in those other layers of Maslow's hierarchy, we have to practice self-care, because if you don't practice self-care, you can't show up. You can't be a parent. You can't teach your son's thing. You know, the things that you want to teach them, you can't take care of yourself and your home and help other people. So even though, again, this is where words get a little like, this is where it becomes paradoxical. She is saying that those of us who are like, I need another summer home so I can relax, that's privilege. Mm-hmm. But someone's saying, I need to sleep tonight. Mm-hmm. I need to take a break today from social media. I need to revive, go on a walk. That self-care is essential for being a human being. So, you know, I also, like you said, when I listen to the podcast I listen to, I also walk away going, oh, but that's the opening. Yeah. That's, you know, and Jen, you know this because you just went through and probably still feel a lot of the grief of, you know, your divorce and all this opening and all these new awarenesses and this pain. And it's very similar.
Yeah, that's really good. So like the pain.
This is another grief.
The guilt that you're talking about, because I have white person guilt too. Like,
yeah,
look at that. This isn't breaking open.
This is an opening. Something. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And that you, and this is good to say it out loud, because saying it out loud, it gives us, because I've said it out loud too. I think most white women are saying, but you know, but now I feel bad. And it's like, well, they're not, you know, Black women are like, well, that's not going to do us any good. You feeling bad. So do your work, you know, gear up, read. And all that means is it doesn't mean you have to go to a protest right now. It just means your willingness to listen, to maybe follow some new teachers, to maybe diversify your Facebook feed or your, because like you said, in your community, Todd and I live in a very white community. Like it's, you know, we live outside of Chicago and we both lived in Chicago for a long time and have both, you know, with my students that I teach, we're exposed to a diverse community, but the community we live in is super, you know, non-diverse. Homogeneous, is that how you say it? Mm-hmm. Homo. And so we're in that boat too. And then even in that though, when you run into a situation kind of like Dawn did, who are we in that situation? And who, and that's the thing is like, it's okay today after listening to that podcast to kind of feel like shit and go, I kind of feel like shit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I want to listen to another one of those today, and don't, but maybe on Friday you pick up the next one.
Well, and guilt and shame, we should probably talk about that. Yeah. Guilt is, you know,
I did something wrong.
And shame is,
I am something wrong.
Right.
And you are not something wrong.
So I think there's some value to guilt because I think it propels me. Shame, there's no value to whatsoever. So, you know, embrace the guilt because I have it. And how do we use this guilt? You know, I don't know.
Well, and did we inherently do something wrong, or were we not educated? And now we know to be, one of my teachers used to always say to me, Oh, and it would always like scare the crap out of me. And this is when the girls were little. She's like, now you know, so you can't pretend you don't. And I'd be like, oh, like, you know, because you know how some things we can put our head in the sand, but once you know, you can't pretend you don't. But that doesn't mean that, Jen, if you're having a day and parenting is heavy, and you don't have to do this every day. You don't have to do the racism thing every day. But some days, a book, it's like,
step out of your comfort zone. We all have it.
Yeah.
Find it. You know, Kathy and I do a podcast. Some other people march. Some people do this.
It's our reading.
Figure out what's going to kind of propel you to make some changes. That's, you know, some people just jump into the uncomfortable zone in the deep end of the water, and other people kind of have to step their toe in it. Whatever it is, I think we all need to find out what that, because we all agree that something needs to change, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do that? We all do that with our own style, with our own capacity, with our own
interests. One of my clients that I was just talking to, she was like, you know, all these nonfiction books, Kathy, that you're recommending, I don't read nonfiction. I'm like, read Colton Whitehead's books.
What's that?
You know, the Nickel Boys just came out this year, and then he did another one about the Underground Railroad a couple years ago. That's history. It's more of a narrative, but it's like we can find ways, you know, for me, I like reading news articles and I like listening to podcasts, but we don't have to, you don't have to be like, now this is all I'm doing. It's just part of it. And it's going to be a gradual opening, and you're going to have interesting conversations with your boys. And it's going to be just another aspect of your awakening as a woman. Incorporate it into your white womanhood. Mm-hmm. And be a white woman who speaks up for a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. Be an empowered white woman rather than a guilty and ashamed white woman. Yeah, which you already are. You're such a strong woman.
You're a warrior.
Yeah, you got a lot of warrior energy. Yeah.
In closing, Megan said, that struck me too on the podcast, Jennifer. I Googled this idea after and found this article and the author to be interesting. And the title of the article is Why Self-Care is Considered a Privilege. It's going to be an interesting read. So I'll put that in the show notes if anybody wants to check that out.
Yeah, and let's put it on the Facebook page and we can have a little discussion about it.
Sure.
Because if people are like, well, what about this? Like, this is something we need to parse out, because we do not want to throw away the word self-care. Mm-hmm. We just may need to recontextualize it.
Like the summer home is an interesting, or like the second massage in a week. Yeah,
I need my third massage this week. And that is privilege. That's, you know, that's a money privilege. These are my concerns. Like, I will give this last, I saw my friend Annie Birdside this week, and we're having a conversation about how much is going on. And she's been struggling with tinnitus. And as you guys know, I get migraines occasionally. And we were talking about how, even though she's had tinnitus and I still am getting our migraines, we're not thinking about it anymore. Mm-hmm. We are now filled with other things we're thinking about. Last night I had a migraine, took medicine, moved on, haven't thought about it. Whereas when things are calm, I'm like, oh, my migraines. What am I going to do about my migraines? And that's, I have a lot of space for it. Now I don't. It doesn't mean I'm not having migraines. It just means I'm looking at other things. So I think that's what they mean about privilege or self-care, is like me constantly researching my migraines versus now I'm trying to look at other things too.
Any parting thoughts, Jennifer?
No, all that was really, really helpful, because I kind of went, after listening to that podcast, I kind of went to the other extreme, and I was trying to read everything and follow all these influencers and to make donations and buy t-shirts. And like, I then overwhelmed myself.
Yep.
So, you know, finding that balance between, you know, still doing the important things. Like, one of my son's friends invited me to a protest on Saturday, and I really wanted to go, but I was also having a really bad time dealing with some of the divorce stuff and going through some of the paperwork, and I felt so overwhelmed. And I realized, like, okay, you know what? Taking care of myself doesn't mean that I'm being completely selfish. Like, I can still do other things.
Yes.
And so I really tried to keep that mantra in my head, like, self-care is not selfish. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you guys shining a light on that nuance between, you know, we can't do everything for everyone else all the time. We're never, we have to fill our tanks. Mm-hmm. So, and filling your tank isn't overfilling it either. Right. So I appreciate that. So thank you very much.
And on that note, Jen, and for everybody else, because I know we're closing here, it's I know everybody's got to go, is that when you are choosing to post something or focus on something, and again, you're going to be playing with this and it's not going to be perfect, but what is it that you're most interested in? You don't have to post about everything. You don't have to talk about everything. And maybe now you're at the beginning stages where you're like, I don't know. And that's fine too. But like, I know for Todd and I, like I'm trying to focus some energy on Chicago. And my best Chicago connection as far as doing help and good work is Jamal. And I want people to give money to my block, my hood, my city. There's a million places to give money, but I'm like, that's where I'll put my energy. Today I saw a post from my doula about helping Black mothers who are, you know, seeking support, if it be through donations or whatever it may be. And I'm like, that's where I want to put some money because that's of interest to me. You don't have to do it all. Just what is a thing and focus in your energy on and connect your personality and interests to a need rather than I'm going to do it all. So, and you know, but maybe right now you're like, I don't know. That's okay too. Then just educate for a while and you'll find it and it changes.
So next Wednesday is the first of two white privilege sessions. Don't forget we have that membership directory thing. I know some of you have filled it out. It's just a way for us to get to know each other. And if you want to reach out to one another in between meetings, you have to give yourself, you have to give your permission in the box. But, you know, I think it says open to connect or something like that. But if you want to like connect with each other outside of the Zen Talks, we want to make it easy for you guys to do that. And it has a whole bunch of other stuff like books.
I listed
movies.
Like 1,000 books. So did Dawn, I noticed. Yeah. And I listed like 1,000 movies. Like I just went to town on that thing. So not only are you putting your information in, but you can read
what
everybody
else's.
What
was your
else's.
Favorite quote?
My favorite quote was the Susan Hansen one that I have in my room.
What is it?
I can't do the whole thing. It's about what would I give in? What would my life be like if I were to give in to my own ragged dance and, you know, walk among the flowers and just be present to the world?
That's not nearly as good as mine.
Which is oink oink, my good man.
Oink oink, my good man.
Yeah, Todd's got to raise his game on his quotes.
No,
we're going to work on that.
Mine's simple, easy. Oink oink, my good man.
Okay, I'm going to go eat. Thanks for staying on later, you guys. We love you.
Keep trucking.
Let's hang in there and take care of each other and take care of the world a little bit, and we'll get through this. Okay.
Adios.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, bye, guys.